Tick, boom. Well, it's Monday once again, peeps, and you know what that means. It is time for your favorite podcast, my favorite podcast, everybody's favorite podcast. It's Meltdown Monday, baby. Welcome to the Meltdown. As always, my name's Tom Finkiel. We are living life large and in charge on the beautiful side of the pond known as the United Kingdom. And it has been one heck of a weekend for me. I've had the pleasure of standing on stage in front of thousands with one of the biggest back to boogie nights that the UK has ever put on. Yes, we've been rocking it with The Real Thing and Odyssey and Hot Chocolate and Boney M, as well as the big operatic superstar that is Russell Watson. We've been flag waving and getting all patriotic. And when we talk about patriotism, there is nobody that waves a flag with more pride and more love in their hearts than the big man that I'm going to bat over to across the pond. Ladies and gentlemen, the creation of devastation. It's Brian Clark. Boom. How are you, brother?
I am doing well, Tomcat. Phenomenal intro, as always. Hope you're doing great this morning. Listen, here it is. When our next superstar joined forces with WWF in 1987, the Federation was put on notice for a path of destruction that would annihilate the competition. With a look of post-war warriors and face paint that would intimidate any opponent, the course was set for beatings and pain for the entire tag team division. A mask of fear concealed the paint of real monsters. How about these numbers? Three WWF tag team championships, and here's the big one, 478 consecutive days as champion, which was a record at the time. Ladies and gentlemen, this is episode 7, and we are in tag team heaven. Please welcome our good friend, one half of Demolition, Barry Smash Darso.
Holy cow. Unbelievable. Thanks for that announcement there. Once I saw Tom doing you, I'm thinking, well, what the heck is Brian going to say about me? Well, you said it, and I appreciate it. Great to be on here, you guys. Thank you.
Absolute pleasure. An absolute pleasure that you are with us. Honestly, the list of accolades that you have got, good sir, is second to none. Check these out. I'm going to reel these off for the Meltdown universe. So, Barry is a former Mid-South TV champion, a former NWA United States Tag Team Champion, a former NWA Mid-Atlantic Heavyweight Champion, two-time NWA World Six-Man Tag Team Champion, two-time NWA World Tag Team Champions, and three-time, baby, three-time WWF Tag Team Champions. We're all about the three-peats. Brian, how many tag team titles you got?
Three, baby.
Three, baby. How many DJs of the Year have I got? Three, baby. Oh, it's all about the three, baby.
I love it.
Meltdown.
It's I love
good.
It.
How are you this morning, Barry? Thank you so much for being with us. Are you good, man?
I can't complain at all. And like I was telling you guys earlier, Axe wanted to be on here so bad, but he had a family commitment. But we're gonna both be on the show again if you guys have us.
Absolutely, yes. Yes, of course.
We are definitely going to reach out that hot tag. And if there's anybody that we want slapping our hand, it's definitely Demolition. So we're going to be getting all forces bound up in one. So because we are remiss of Axe this beautiful afternoon, we are going to take a nice big deep dive into the beautiful career of the legendary Barry Darso and all the different incantations, all the different gimmicks, all the different personas that he has lived all throughout his career. So if you're ready for a ride, Barry, we're ready to take you on a roller coaster.
Well, I'm going to try to answer all the questions I can. I've been hit on the head quite a few times, so there's a lot of stuff I can't remember, and then there's stuff I don't want to remember, too.
I think
you're going to do great. You're going to do great, man.
So I want to start you off because it is a big feature of mine that I like to take a little look back just before you got into the wrestling business. And you were a part of a truly illustrious class at Robbinsdale High School. For those of you that are listening to this show that don't know, Barry lay it up for us. Who were your classmates?
Well, now I had a lot of classmates from Robbinsdale and a lot that were from other schools close by too. So it's not just Robbinsdale, but
Nope.
Kurt Hennig, Rick Rude, Tom Zink,
Wow.
John Nord, Brady
Yeah.
Boone. I know I'm missing some other people, but you know, then we had the other schools that were right close by, you know, Lane Bloom, Mike Enos, Kevin Kelly, both the Road Warriors, Al Blake, who was partners with Ivan Koloff after I left there. So there's a lot of them in that class coming up.
So what you're telling me is that if you were in a position where you were in the football team, the high school football team, and you rocked up to Robbinsdale High School, and you're particularly your group, you've got Mr. Perfect, you've got Ravishing Rick, you've got Barry Darso, you've got Tom Zake, you've got Nikita Koloff, and
Nikita
the league
Koloff,
just goes on and on and on. I'd just get back in the coach and leave. I'd be done. That'd be it. Just the look on the face. You wouldn't even need the face paint at that particular stage.
Well, thank God we were on the east side of the tracks, because the guys on the west side of the tracks never came over because of that.
Is that right?
Oh,
we love it. Wow. Taking that back. My goodness me. You must have had some fun in high school with those guys.
Oh, we had a great time. You know, and Rick Rude grew up three blocks from me. And so I knew Rick when I was, you know, 10, 12 years old. In fact, I had a crush on his sister. And he found out about it, and he told me, he says, Barry, please don't date my sister. And just for respect, I didn't. But, you know, and then Kurt Hennig growing up all the years, I mean, he was a river way back in junior high. So, you know, we've had some good times. It was good being close with them.
Amazing. Go on, Barry.
Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying that. So Kurt started his ribbing days very early is what you're telling me.
Oh, very early.
Okay.
Very early.
Yeah. All right.
Give us a good Kurt story.
A good Kurt story. I'm going to give you a good clean story. All right. Well, it's not so clean, but so my son was about, 1 or 2 years old, and we were potty training him. And we had this big party. It was a Halloween party. And, you know, I travel with Kurt all the time, and I always tell him, oh, yeah, it's getting soon. My son's going to be out of the diapers. He's going to get potty trained. So we have this big party. There's 50, 75 people at the party. We're all drinking and everything. And Kurt sneaks in the house, and all of a sudden he goes in the bathroom. And I probably shouldn't even say this on the air, but he ended up pooping in the potty chair.
Oh my God.
He didn't say nothing about it. And I go in there and I go, well, that can't be my son, you know.
Oh my God.
If,
like,
you know,
a Canadian logging camp.
My wife came in, and so there's 75 people, you know, 50, 70, 100 people, whatever. My wife comes in and sees this. She runs out the door. The first thing she yells, Hennig, get in here. And Hennig took right off out the door. That was Kurt.
Oh.
Kurt told me, he says, I can't believe that your son finally was potty trained, you know? Like, we were going to believe that. That was an early Kurt story.
Hey, that's called, that's having dedication to the rib right there.
I love
Kurt. I'll tell you.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so many of our friends have passed away, but, you know, Kurt and Rick Rude and, you know, all these guys, I miss them so much. Brian Adams, you know, it's just like, holy cow. All passed away too young.
We are sending all our love upstairs to the fallen brothers and thank them for everything that they gave and all the entertainment that they provided throughout the years. Mr. Perfect was my all-time favorite. So,
That's and I don't like telling stories like that, but I think Kurt would probably be just laughing going, that's the greatest thing I've ever done.
Yes.
You know what I mean? That's how Kurt would be.
Yeah.
That's
the first time I've ever
told that story on the air, too.
And we got it. We got it right here. We got on the meltdown.
You know what that is?
Hey, Kurt.
That's a scoop.
Yeah, he would appreciate this. Oh, yeah.
Well, let's talk about another couple that have sadly passed away, but you are featured very heavily in their career as they are in yours, and that's the Road Warriors. You mentioned them a little bit earlier on, being very close to you in proximity, but you worked with them early doors, on the doors, as it were, as a bouncer. What were some early stories of the Hawk and the Animal?
Hawk and the Animal. Well, Rick Rude first worked at the bar, and we were all kind of, everybody's doing different things, bounced at different bars and everything. And Rick said, you know, Barry, you got to come and work at this bar. It's the greatest bar in the world. So I asked him, I said, well, you know, how is it? Is it a pretty easy bar to work at? He goes, no, it's pretty brutal. And I said, are there going to be any other guys? He says, well, I'm going to ask Hawk to come in. And right away when he said, Hawk's coming in, I said, well, then you're bringing an Animal too? And he says, yeah, we're all going to be there. So then I knew if a fight broke out, I was going to have somebody to back you. And it ended up being every night there was fights. I had one or two, three fights, whatever. And, you know, if somebody jumped on you and three or four guys, the first thing would happen would they come flying over and they'd be right there to help you. And it was quite the bar, but we had a great time there.
So it sounds like a little bit of maybe a flashback to the movie Roadhouse before it was cleaned up, right?
It was exactly like that. It was a strip bar during the day, and then they had live bands at night. It was just this huge, huge, giant place. And that's how we ended up getting into the wrestling business, was working at that bar. Because one of the bartenders there was Eddie Sharkey, who was in the business. And he watched us every night throwing these people out, or every day. And one night we're all drinking beer after, and Eddie came up and he says, I got to get you guys into wrestling. That's how the whole thing started, was because of Grandma B's.
Grandma B's, yes. Yeah, I heard about this on a documentary that I was watching. It sounds like it'd be great to be a fly on the wall, but that's the only place I would want to be in that bar. It sounds like chaos, and it sounds like the guys who were running the door seriously knew what they were doing.
It was the most fun I think I've ever had, was working at that bar. You know, it was a rough crowd, but, you know, they respected you. But it was just every once in a while you get those guys that come in and think they own the world, and, you know, they didn't.
And then they found out. They sure as hell found out. You mess around, you find out. That was a line from Ernest the Cat Miller from the last week.
Yeah, exactly. We had Ernest on, and he was some classic stories from him. Everybody's got their great stories, and I know you do. We're just happy to have you, man. And one of the things I want to ask you, I'm going to switch back and forth with, because I'm going to touch on Demolition, and then one of the things, like, with Bill's voice and your facial expressions, like when Bill was talking and then your facial expressions, you guys spoke so well and you were on point. Did you guys have instant chemistry? Did it happen really fast for you two as a team?
It was instant. It was unbelievable. The first time we were in the ring, you know, behind the scenes, when you're in the dress room and you're talking and, you know, what do you want to do? And, you know, and Bill was the guy that I respected more than anything. And so I asked him, I was the young boy. I said, Bill, what do you want to do in there? He goes, you know, let's just have fun and just play around. So when we went out there, it was like everything I did, he knew I was going to do, and I knew what he was going to do. So we just hit it off perfect. And it was the same thing with the promos. You know, Vince would say, hey, say something about, you know, Brian Clark in Nassau, and we just wing it, and it just worked out perfect together. It was a great, great team together.
Yeah, I was watching some stuff over the weekend, and we'll get to a little bit later, because I do want to ask you some detailed stuff. But I just noticed that was one of the big things. Your facial expressions, it was just back and forth. It was just such a smooth transition, getting the point across, nailing the promo every time. So, yeah.
Well, you know, it was kind of a shoot, because, you know, Bill was, you know, he's a pretty analytical guy. And the way he talks, you know, I was really kind of in awe. And that's kind of how it started, you know. So those facial expressions were, you know, I'm listening to him going, holy cow. You know, I mean, I loved it when he was doing those promos. So, you know, how could you screw up after him? You know, it would be a terrible, terrible thing if you couldn't do an interview with Bill, you know?
Well, you didn't screw up.
You nailed it. No, you nailed it. It was perfect. I mean, it was just like boom, 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 you know. So it worked, definitely.
But what's funny about the whole thing is I'm nothing like that, and Bill was nothing like that. So that's what was really kind of crazy about it.
It becomes a situation really where it's a persona that you can then really amp up to 11 and take you on a completely different journey spectrum. You can take it any which way. And talking about, obviously, we're looking at Demolition, but we're only looking at its small parts. But it was how you went from a character that was very animated with facial features and the deep growly voice to a complete segue into a gimmick that we really want to talk about today, which is the iconic Repo Man, who had a very different structure to his voice. He was very high-pitched, very squeaky, but again, those facial features were all a part of it. It was constant movement, it was constant drama, it was constantly looking down that camera lens as well, which I thought was beautifully done, because you were always looking to it and talking at the camera like you were talking to them at home, as opposed to telling other wrestlers how much you were going to destroy them in the ring. Talk to us a little bit about Repo Man. So we put a pin into Demolition in 1991 after Axe departed from the company in 90. And obviously, he went on to have a tag with our fallen brother, Bryan Adams. So that's something you guys have got in common, obviously, from Chronic and Demolition. But then you went your separate ways. So talk to us about how Barry Darso went from being Smash of Demolition to being the Repo Man.
Well, it was kind of funny because I went home and I kind of just wanted to be out of the business. You know, I've been on the road for so long and wrestling every night. And it was kind of the end. And I was out duck hunting or something. And Vince called and said, Barry, I want you back, you know? And I said, well, what am I going to do? And he said, I don't know, we'll think of something. I said, well, give me a couple of weeks off or whatever. So he called and he asked me if I wanted to be Doink the Clown. And at that time I told him, I said, no, I really don't want to do that. I said, I kind of got another idea. And so I ended up flying up and talking to Vince. And I told him that I used to repo cars. And he said, really? In real life? I said, yeah, I used to repo cars and I had fun doing it. And I said, I want to come up with a kind of a gimmick, kind of like the Riddler or the Joker or something like that. And I said, and the only reason why I want to do it is I said, I don't need to be a top guy. I just want to work with top guys, get the top guys over, and, you know, work my deal. Because I was starting to hurt pretty bad, you know, my knees, my back, everything. And I just wanted to have a lot of fun and no pressure. So he says, well, how are you going to do it? I says, well, why don't I put a mask on, a little thin mask? I says, I'm going to drop about 60 pounds. I'm going to change everything I do. I'm going to run around like the Riddler, you know, be sneaky. And I says, and I'm just going to put the boots to people. And I said, I want to steal cars. I want to steal bicycles from kids. I want every kid to hate my guts. And I said, I'll be the biggest heel so then I can get Randy Savage over, Duggan over, everybody. And he's going, God, I like that. I like that. And he says, you think you can pull it off? I said, I know I can pull it off. So I said, but I need to turn babyface at the end of this thing, because I wanted to really get into doing Make-A-Wish stuff. And, you know, I just knew it was going to get old fast. After you work with these guys, you get beat. And then, you know, where do you go? You know, now all of a sudden you're a bottom guy. But if you can get a little push and be a middle baby face or upper middle baby face, now all of a sudden, you know, kids are going to want to talk to you and see you and meet you. And I just thought, you know, the best gimmick for kids would be that. If they liked you, all of a sudden, maybe you start stealing things from adults and giving them to kids. You know, I mean, I had all these different thoughts, but it was right before WrestleMania in Las Vegas way back. And I told Vince, I said, Vince, it's time to change me. I need to be a baby face. It's just getting too hard. You know, people aren't buying what I'm doing and it just didn't feel right. And he said, Barry, I'm not going to change your baby face. You're going to stay a heel. And then that's when I said, you know, I'm done. I'm going to put my notice. And I said, Vince, thanks for everything, but I don't want to do this anymore. And then that's when I wasn't the repo man anymore. But I loved doing that because it was something completely out of the box. You know, I don't know if you ever watched like The Voice or American Idol. You know, they always say, you know, sing something that's completely different than what you want to do. Well, that's what I did. It was something completely out of the box. And I thought I pulled it off.
Well, I mean, for you to drop 60 pounds and you actually laid the gimmick out on a platter for him and you had the details of how you were going to do it, what you were going to do, what the concept of the character was. That's again, that's just too bad where they dropped the ball and did not follow through with you turning you face at the end of it. So that's, but it just goes to show your commitment, being able to drop the weight and present the character. That is really amazing.
Well, you know, it was funny because then Vince says, "Hey, I got a great vignette for you." He says, maybe you kick the window in a car or something. You think you can do that?" I said, "Oh, I know I can do it." And we were out one night, and you know, the cameras are on you and everything, and the camera, I can't remember who the camera guy was. He goes, "You can't really kick a window in, can you?" And I said, "Shit, yeah, I could kick that thing. Anybody can kick it in." And then I think he tried to kick it and it didn't, just kind of almost broke his foot, you know. And I said, "No, here's how you do it. You ready to film this?" So they filmed it and I kicked that sucker and my foot went through there and I couldn't get it out, kind of, you know. It was like, I actually couldn't believe I did do it, but I knew when the camera was on, you had to get it done, you know. Otherwise, it would have been a beautiful blooper, you know.
So the screeching that we'd have heard from Repo Man at the end of that vignette would have been a shoot.
Yeah.
I'd love to have seen that because you were truly an iconic character. For me growing up, I always remember. So I came in, my fandom began sort of at the back end of 91 and then really took off around the Rumble 92. So I remember everything from that. And then I went back and looked at all the demolition stuff and became an instant fan. But the Repo Man was just such an iconic character to me, and hosting things like professional wrestling conventions all over the world, so many people remember that character so positively and with such love in their hearts. It would have been great to have turned you face.
Well, you know, what's funny too is a lot of people, you know, some people come out and say, "I can't believe you did that. That was, you know, a terrible thing. You were smashed and then you became the Repo Man." And I'm looking at it differently. I go, "Well, the demolition was gone. Now it's done. And now I got another job for another couple of years, making some serious dough, having fun doing it. I'm with the guys in the dressing room." I mean, that's half the thing, is being with your friends every day. You know, yeah. You'd be at home and you'd tell the wife, you'd say, "Oh man, you know, I got to go back on the road again. This is just terrible." Well, you get out the door and you kick your feet up and you go, "Yeah," you know, but she's doing the same thing at home. Thank God he's leaving, right?
you know, that makes all the difference in the world is the locker room and being with guys that you love to be with. I like with traveling with Brian, some of my most cherished memories, because whether it was at the gym, whether we were getting a rent-a-car on a flight, going international, hotels down the road for 300 miles, whatever it is, man, I always had him there with me. And just those memories and being close, it's like it is a different family, but it is that brotherhood.
Wasn't Brian the funniest son of a gun you ever been around?
Barry, I would have to tell him to stop talking. Just let's just drive for 100 miles and don't say anything, because I'm over here. I'm crying. I can't catch my breath. Let's listen to the radio, whatever it takes, please just stop. And he was just constantly, I mean, he always made me laugh just all the time. I mean, it never ended with him.
Did he ever do a Tiger Chung Lee for you?
Oh, of course. Yes. Well, of course he did. Yeah.
One night it was me and him, and I think, I don't know if it was The Undertaker or Savage or somebody, we're all, you know, having a few beers, and then Brian gets on the phone and he calls up Tiger Chung Lee as Tiger Chung Lee. He says, and he says, "Ah, Tiger," he says, "I'm going to kick your ass," you know, and Tiger's going, "Who is this?" You know, and it went on for about 15 minutes and we never laughed so hard in our life. He did Tiger Chung Lee to Tiger to kick his ass.
That is great. He would do another one, like we'd be going down the road, and I said, Brian, I'm not sure. I think you're, you know, because there was no GPS, of course. Are we going the right way? He's, oh, don't worry, brother. We're not lost. I recognize the formation of the trees. What? You know, just whatever. He would just make up shit. But yeah, he absolutely loved being around him. I mean, he couldn't get enough of it.
He told me one day, he goes, Barry, he goes, yeah, we're going to go out to LA. We're going to go fishing with my brother, you know? And I said, well, is it, you know, where are we going? He goes, oh, it's on the ocean. He's got this giant boat. We're going to have a hell of a time out there. So we get out there and, you know, it's a pretty big boat, you know, and we get out there. Well, it just so happened we're about 40 miles out and the waves are about 30 feet tall. And his brother's riding the waves and I'm shitting tacks and Brian's laughing his head off. We have to close all the doors because the water's coming up over the top. I thought we were going to die. And him and his brother were laughing their heads off like nothing even happened. And it was like, holy cow, you know, huge giant boat, he tells me. And it's this little, you know, 24 footer on the ocean. Oh.
They tell you the story about him and his brother. And they drove the dirt bike through the glass sliding windows.
No, I never heard that one.
So they were, you know, in the summertime clowning around, not a whole lot to do. So, you know, Brian does this rick, rick, rick with the motorcycles, got it all revved up, right? And I don't know, he pops a clutch or something and goes straight through the glass sliding doors, just glass everywhere. And didn't get it hurt or anything, but they thought they had pulled it over on their mom. Get it all cleaned up, get new windows in before the end of the day, before she gets home from work. Everything's smooth, no big deal, no big deal. So I guess, like, I don't know, a few weeks later or whatever it happens to be, she's vacuuming and cleaning up and goes to pull back the carpet, and then there's glass everywhere. So anyway, they had to come clean on that story. But he was always, from his childhood and until an adult, always into something, but funny, you know?
Yeah, I just spoke to his wife not too long ago, and what a sweetheart she was.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes, Irene.
Yep. Yeah.
They were. He was actually busted in that scenario. He was busted by his mom.
Oh, he was busted, completely busted. No getting out of that.
Well, as we're talking about Brian, let's chat, because we've got the USA and the UK connection. It's something that makes us special. And speaking of the UK, you had the pleasure of being in the ring with Brian at SummerSlam 92. Talk to us a little bit about Wembley.
Oh man. Well, you know, the UK, you know, London, unbelievable. I love everybody. The fans are nuts. Beer is incredible. And to be wrestling one of your really good friends is huge. And then to do it at Wembley Stadium, we had just the greatest time. And I remember we were in the dressing room and I said, Brian, you got to press slam me. And he looked at me and he goes, I don't know if I can. I said, yeah, right, right. He pressed me so easy up above his head like I was nothing. And we had such a good time. And I remember when they gave us the finish, they said, yeah, Brian's going to go over. And, you know, I think Brian kind of felt a little bad, you know, that I'm going to have to do a job for him. But I was so excited for him because that was why I was the repo man, was to get those guys over so they could get to the next level. And he was so appreciative, and that's just the kind of guy he was. And it was just a fun match. Yeah.
Yeah. And you mentioned the strength of him pressing people. I watched him press Taker for reps. And you know, Mark is 6'9", 320, and he's long. So it's not an easy move. But his strength was amazing. I watched him do 315 behind the head for reps, you know. Seated shoulder presses, amazing strength.
We do on a lot of our shows, but we're going to definitely do it on this one. Let's raise a toast to the big man upstairs, Mr. Brian Adams. This is for you, brother. There we go. We're on brilliant today, actually, Brian. We're on brilliant.
And there he is. Brilliant. Oh, you're brilliant today.
Brilliant today, yep. Mate. Brilliant.
As my mic takes a bump, but there's Brian. Yep.
He's always watching you back. He's always.
Oh, yeah. Always.
Cool. Right. Well, speaking of watching your back, you were obviously watching the backs of so many of your wonderful compadres in the professional wrestling world. And I want to talk about some of them that were the top of the mountain during your tenure in the WWF. So there were six. In fact, there were seven. But Andre had such a small run. I'm not going to mention him in this particular list. But there were six WWF world champions during your time in the World Wrestling Federation. We had Hulk Hogan, we had Macho Man Randy Savage, we had the Ultimate Warrior, Sergeant Slaughter, Ric Flair, and Bret Hart. They were the six. So how would you compare those six iconic names to being the top of the mountain? How did they compose themselves backstage? How did they sort of interact with the other talent? Did any of them think they were more superstars? Did they think they were in a position that they should have been in years before? Talk to us about the champions for your tenure.
You know, I've always got along great with everybody. And, you know, even if somebody has faults, I don't look at the faults. I look at the good things. And that's what my whole life is all about. And I've never had a problem with anybody. And all those guys were actually fantastic to me. You know, Hulk was probably the one that, you know, he had to have his own dressing room because he had so much stuff going on, you know, commercials, this, that, and I understood that. But, you know, most of them all came into the dressing room with the guys and were the guys, you know, and Warrior was a little different. Warrior only had a few friends and, you know, I think a lot of people were upset that he was the champion because he wasn't even hardly in this business. And all of a sudden they give him the championship. And of course he's going against guys that are unbelievable workers. And that's who got him over. And that was what their job was. But, you take a guy like, you know, Kurt Hennig and, you know, Rick Rude, he's working with the Warrior. He's had matches with everybody and he works with the Warrior and Warrior butt kills him, you know. It's like, you know, he was the only one I thought of is why is he the champion, you know? And he drew a lot of money, but I think anybody who got put the belt on at that time could have drew money. But so I think out of all the champions, the Warrior was the one that, you know, I didn't really care for having him be the champion. Everybody else I loved. Bret Hart, unbelievable. Flair, I've known him forever. I love Rick. And don't get me wrong, the Warrior was great to me. I've been to his house. I've rode in limos with him, done everything. But, you know, the champions I always thought should have been right with the guys all the time. And Hulk wasn't and Warrior wasn't. And I didn't like that at all because nobody's better than anybody, you know. Barry Horowitz could have been the world champion. Hulk Hogan's the champion. They would look down at the job guys, I believed. Where I never did that. I tried to, you know, be friends with everybody there because they're the guys that make you, you know. And I just think some of those champions, you know, they didn't give the other guys the time of day. And I think a lot of that was because they weren't one of the boys.
I can understand every bit of that, Barry, because like it's a team concept.
Yes.
It takes everybody. It's not just one or two people. And as you know, there are times in this business where certain people get that big push and they get up top and then they forgot about how they got there.
Right. And you know, and I'm not saying nothing bad about Hulk. I love Hulk. He's always been great to me. But it's just when you're in the dressing room and you got, you know, 20 guys, 30 guys in there and you're playing cribbage and telling stories and laughing like with Crush or, you know, Bret Hart's got the cartoons on the chalkboard and, you know, somebody comes in and makes like they're the Chief Strongbow or, you know, that's what the wrestling business is about. It's not another room that somebody's in that, you know, you might come in and shake your hand and leave right away again. I mean, it's going down the road with the boys and those are the boys that are getting you over. And the Warrior did not do that for sure. And Hulk tried to do it, I believe, but it wasn't for him.
I believe there's a story where the Warrior sent you to a little trip to the dentist. That's right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And he didn't even apologize for probably a week or two later. Yeah, it was Axe Smash and Crush, I believe. It was a six man against the Road Warriors and Warrior. We were in the Target Center in Minneapolis. My mom never came to the matches, never watched me wrestle ever. And I talked her into coming to the matches, and I got her seats right in the front. Her and my sister, they were sitting in the front. And I ran in to get the Warrior. He gave me an elbow, knocked my two front teeth out, and one of them fell right by my mom's feet. That's how far it flew out. And I looked at Warrior after, and I go, "Son of a bitch, what the hell?" And he didn't even know what I was talking about. And I got down, I scooted out of the ring, I got my teeth, and I put them in my trunks. I went back in there and did it, tagged out, and God, they hurt. My nerves are hanging down. It was brutal. And I think we were on our way to New York or something the next day, and I called my dentist, and I had to go to the dentist that night, and he fixed my teeth. And it was about a week later he finally came up and said, "I didn't even know I did it." And I said, "Well, that's your problem. You don't know what you do in the ring. I mean, everybody knows what they do in the ring, but I couldn't even give him a receipt back or anything, you know?"
Yeah, that's a shame for him to wait 2 weeks. I mean, you check on the guy that night, immediately after the match, if you can.
How was he in the WCW locker room, Brian?
I got along with him. I didn't spend a lot of time with him. It was always very cordial. But again, I didn't spend the time that like Barry did with him in matches or in the ring or Barry actually worked with him. He was only in WCW for a short while.
Yeah, a cup of
And then
coffee.
I think he had an injury or something that I think he maybe tore the bicep or something happened. And he didn't stay around very long.
Well, you know, I worked with the Warrior again in singles matches in when I was Smash, and never hurt me after that at all. I mean, it was, I think it just, he was so nervous that he didn't even know what he was doing. And I think he just, his gimmick was like that, you know. But you know, the difference between him and Hulk was unbelievable. I mean, you know, he was the man. Hulk was the one who actually made wrestling what it is today, I believe. Because when he went from Vern Gagne's territory when he filmed the Rocky movie, when he left there and went to the WWF, I think he was the reason why the WWF got so big and where it's at today, you know? And that was the difference, I think. The Warrior was nowhere near that, you know? And, you know, Flair was up there, and you know, Bret, how can you not like Bret? He could work with anybody. You know what I mean? It was.
Yeah. It's amazing to hear these stories. It's wonderful. And this is what we do on the Meltdown. We bat it between two legends and see what comes of it. Well, seeing as we just asked Brian about WCW and the Warrior there, let's take it from the Repo Man in WWF and let's segue into Barry's WCW career, where there is a multitude of gimmicks that we're going to talk about. So, making your debut, you were sat in the crowd. I remember you heckling guys in the crowd. And then it was, forgive me if I'm wrong, was it Colonel Robert Parker that sort of took you under his wing,
He took
signed
me
you
under
up,
my wing, yeah.
and you became the blacktop bully?
Yeah, I tell you, what's funny was Flair was kind of doing the booking there, and Flair told me, you know, he called me up, he says, "Barry, you want to come down to W?" I said, "Yeah, let's do it." So he says, "I need a truck driver looking guy." He says, "Figure out what your name's going to be and what you're going to have to do." So right away, I called up Arn Anderson. I said, "Arn, I said, we got to go to Bobby Eaton's garage and we got to have a case of beer and we got to figure this thing out." So we get to the garage and we got about seven, eight, nine beers in there. And, you know, a lot of people don't know Arn like we know Arn, but Arn has these glasses on, and after he has a few beers, he gets a little bit serious, and we're talking about fishing or something, and all of a sudden he gets a breakthrough, and you see his glasses kind of come down to the ridge of his nose, and he looks at you and he goes, "You're the blacktop bully." And I looked at him, I said, "How in the hell did you come up with that? That's the greatest name of all time." I said, "I can work with that." So I went and told Rick that, and he says, "Here's what we're going to do. You're going to be in the audience and you're just going to heckle people and you're going to be like a real fan." And I did that, and the fans didn't know who I was. I mean, it was really strange. And I was yelling at Steamboat, and I was yelling at Dustin Rhodes and all this. And finally, I got in the fight and I went to jail in Atlanta. And it was the real jail downtown. It was brutal. I mean, when they locked you up in that, I was hoping that somebody was going to let me out because, that was so when you're yelling and screaming to try to get out of jail, that was the real deal. And then that's when Colonel Parker came in, and that was the start of the gimmick. And I really thought that that gimmick was going to end up being something later because, once you get a good gimmick and then if the office goes with you, then you're on your way. And when I finally had that truck match with Dustin, I thought that, this was great. It was a tough match. And when we were all done with that, the next morning, Eric Bischoff called me up and he says, Barry, I got good news and I got bad news. And I said, well, what's the good news? He said, you guys had a hell of a match. He says, I loved it. And I said, what's the bad news? He goes, you're fired. I was like, holy shit, I'm fired. Fired for having a good match. And he says, Barry, please don't give me a hard time. He says, you guys bled and you weren't supposed to bleed. And he says, the office up in the CNN towers went nuts because this was all going to be videotaped and sent out for videos. And he says, I got to fire Dustin and I got to fire Mike Graham. And I was just like, holy shit, I couldn't believe it. And I got fired. And he told me, he says, but I'm going to bring you back. I promise you. And I said, all right, Eric. I said, we're friends. I said, I'm fired then. So that was the end of my blacktop bully career.
And that's a tough one because I think about it. I mean, okay, say you were to get busted open, which has happened to me. We all have. But I got 30 staples in the back of my head. It was on TBS. I was bleeding everywhere. Road Warrior caught me with animal caught me with the rim of the chair and laid me open. So, I mean, there were no repercussions to me because I had no control over it. Same like with your situation. I don't understand how they could terminate you if you get busted open in the match.
And that match was crazy. If you remember.
Yes. Yeah.
How did you structure that? Was there any kind of rehearsal for that? Because that.
Yeah, there was nothing like that. And and then when I was talking to Eric, I said, well, I hope that the camera crew gets fired and I hope the truck driver gets fired and I hope the helicopter guy gets fired. I said, why is it up to Dustin, myself, and Mike to get fired? And he says, well, it was Mike's idea and Mike came up with the match. He came up with everything and you should know better, And I said, well, I don't know better. I said, it's an uncensored pay-per-view match in a truck with a cage and barbed wire and horse poop, and I mean it was you're going 65 miles down the road and they put the brakes on. I mean, you really flew. It was when I was hanging on the outside, it's you're going down the highway with a helicopter just above the trees. I mean, it was a pretty wild deal, and you get fired. It was terrible.
Yeah, that just didn't seem too fair on that one.
But, it was a change of guards. That was, Hulk was in there. Kevin Nash was in there. All those guys. And then the NWO was created. And, I mean, that was the biggest thing. So the Blacktop Bully didn't have a chance. I wasn't any part of any of that, And the NWO, that was the biggest thing ever. So,
yeah.
83 weeks, right? 83 weeks. For those numbers, for that amount of time, is truly sensational. WCW did an incredible job. Well, Eric did bring you back with another wonderful gimmick. And this one, we're going to tee off on.
Yeah.
The hole in one.
Yeah.
Now, we know you love your golf. So was this just an amp up of your own persona?
Yep. I loved golf And I really wanted John Daly. I wanted to give him a call and have him be my manager because we would have had a hell of a time. And that was kind of my thought process, but that ended up didn't go on. And I played in quite a few celebrity golf tournaments around the country. And I really wanted to get into that too. But everything I want to do at the end, it never happened. So that was a short-lived deal right there. But, Eric called me back too. And He gave me a contract, which I worked about 3 days a month, and I really felt like I was cheating the business, after, making $50 a night way back when I started, and driving thousands of miles, and starving to death, and sleeping in bathtubs and cars and everything. And all of a sudden, now I get this big contract, and I don't even have to work. I felt guilty as heck. And I call up Eric. Eric, am I at TV? Well, no, you got the day off. And I'd get mad. Instead, I should have said, "Oh, thank you," and not even said a word, and just got lost, and hoped that the contract kept re-going, which a lot of guys did. But I just felt kind of weird about it. And then he said to me, he called me up. He says, "Barry, I got Goldberg coming in." He says, "I'd like you to help Goldberg out." And I said, "Rick, yeah." So Goldberg was having matches that were lasting like 15 seconds, and that was it. He says, "I want you to be the first one to have a match with him for about 4 or 5 minutes. Can you do that?" And I said, "Yeah." So I talked to Bill, and I love Bill, a great, great guy. And he says, "Barry, what do you want to do?" He says, and I told him, I said, "Let's do this, this, this." And he was looking at me like, I might look weak or whatever, but he understood what I was doing. And we ended up having a really good little, 4 minute match in there, which doesn't sound long, but 4 minutes with a guy who's been killing everybody in 30 seconds, that's like an hour Broadway, And it ended up, we had a good little match. And, Eric came up and said, "Barry, you don't know how much this means." He says, "I really appreciate it." And Bill, unbelievable. And then I hardly worked ever again. I mean, it was a great contract.
It really was, honestly. But at least you were ringing Eric and asking him about the dates. And I don't know, you'll know this story, Brian. You'll know this story. Before his untimely passing, I remember having a conversation with Lanny Poffo, who once the Macho Man had signed in '95, negotiated a contract to bring Lanny in as well. And Lanny signed the contract for 3 years with Eric, and Eric forgot about it. And Lanny just claimed that money for 3 years and didn't do one day's work. We had the genius on the roster. Nothing. 3 years.
Now I think about that, and I wish I, but that's just not the kind of guy I was. I always wanted to work for my money, but what do you do?
What do you do? What do you do? Blue collar. Psh.
And there were a lot of guys under contract that were seldom used, but I guess there is a benefit to it is to having a deep roster where you can bring someone in if it's to work with Bill or any other the very top of the food chain, so to speak, and be able to let them see a different, instead of them beating the same guy every week or the same guy every few weeks. Now they're bringing in people that they haven't got to see in a while. So there's two sides to it. Yep.
The hardest thing for me was to be Barry Darso. I had a terrible time just trying to be Barry Darso the wrestler. I always had to have some sort of a gimmick. I don't know, Brian, I don't know if you were like that.
I think so, to a certain degree. Whether in tag team or singles, I preferred having a gimmick or a persona that was different from just Brian Clark. Yes.
Yeah, when I was down in Mid-South with Bill Watts, I was Man Mountain Darso, and I had a really hard time because that wasn't me, And I remember I do some promos with Jim Ross, and I could not even do a promo. And Jim Ross would say, "Just talk." And I said, "Well, it's hard just to be Barry Darso, the Man Mountain Darso." So then that's when Bill Watts, he says, "Here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna make you a heel. And you're going to become Crusher Khrushchev. And you're going to have this shovel, and you're going to be partners with Nikolai Volkov, and you're going to be a turncoat, and you're going to bury every American." And he says, "All you have to say is, you're Crusher Khrushchev, and you're going to bury all Americans. It's all you have to say." And after I said that, and the fans started booing, and all of a sudden I could talk a little bit. And I wasn't a Russian, I was an American that liked Russian. So then I could use any voice I wanted. And that's when I finally became a professional wrestler, when I became Crusher Khrushchev. Isn't that something?
Yeah, I mean, the old scenario, giving the ball, let it run with it. You did it. That's
Yeah.
great. Love it.
That's it. As we say on this show, We strapped a rocket to your back and shot for the stars all the way up. Well, speaking of performing as Barry Darso, from a memory that I have from an old WCW Saturday Night show, I think it was in 99. And it was a spot that you did with Harlem Heat where you were wrestling as Barry Darso and they nailed you with the tag team titles and you got amnesia. Do you remember this?
I can't remember that.
Okay,
I had amnesia.
You had amnesia.
There you go. You didn't remember it.
Well, let me paint a little picture for all our Meltdown viewers. So Barry was in a match with Harlem Heat, got nailed by the title, comes back the next week, and he's got amnesia. And all these different gimmicks started turning up on TV. So we had Crusher Khrushchev 1 week, and then the Blacktop Bully returned another week, and then we had Mr. Hole in One another. Do you not remember this?
You know, I kind of do, but I don't. I really didn't watch the TV much, but, you know, they did all that, you know.
It was one of the only shows that we got in the UK, so it was
Yeah, you know, and it's funny because the Harlem Heat are the greatest guys in the world, and they still, when I see Booker T now, he still, oh, you know, who are we? What is your name? You know, because he'd still do that, you know. Oh, but, you know, the stuff that they think of for TV, I love it. That's great.
I thought it was wonderful. I loved seeing you rock up in all these different gimmicks, and I thought they're going to bring the Repo Man back. And obviously, as a child, I was thinking, yeah, they're definitely going to do it. Obviously, it's down to copyright and trademarks and everything else, and it was never going to happen. But I thought the chances were there, and the chances were high. Well, what I'm going to do now is I'm going to ask a question for Barry, and I'm going to ask a question for Brian. And you guys have both got your own ideas. You've both got your own individuality. There's no right answers. There's no wrong answers. But we're going to send this out to the Meltdown universe. As we do each week, we ask our guests to name a different Mount Rushmore on various topics. And the Mount Rushmore that I'm going to ask from Barry Darso is Mount Rushmore of gimmicks. Give me your top four, Barry. Who would appear on your Mount Rushmore of professional wrestling gimmicks?
Okay, Santino, you know, yep, up in the WWE. And in fact, I was with him the day before yesterday, and I told him, I said, you know, you were my favorite gimmick out of anybody I've ever seen. I loved him. And then Sacco, you know, Mankind, Sacco. Mr. Perfect was one of my favorite gimmicks. And when you watch his videos and all that stuff, it really looked like he was doing that. And then
Wait. He wasn't really doing that.
No, he really did that. And then Doink the Clown, I thought was just it was a great gimmick. Because the evil clown, every kid hates the evil clown.
And Matt Bourne pulled it off to perfection. Yes. What a four. So we've got Santino, we've got Mick Foley, Socko, we've got Mr. Perfect, and Doink the Clown. They are a four epic Mount Rushmore. Okay, so we're going to pitch your four. Brian, what have you got for me, brother?
Okay, this is not any particular order, and this is really not based on work rate, more of just, although some of them had great work rates. I'm going to go with the Ultimate Warrior, just because it was an electric entrance, mm-hmm. and a big part of his gimmick. The next one would be Macho Man, because Macho was a great worker and it was a great gimmick also. Mm-hmm. My third choice is Yokozuna. I thought Rodney played that part phenomenal, and with Fuji and with Cornette there, just a winning combination all the way. And then my fourth one, I had a little trouble with this one because there's so many. But while we were in Vegas at WrestleCon, I actually met a guy who knew this gentleman before coming to the States and just laid out his whole history. And it's the Iron Sheik. So I had to go a little old school, but this is the cab driver who had moved to this country, I don't know, 40, 50 years ago, and was just telling us all this information about the Sheik. So those are my four. Yep.
And you know, if you hadn't have said that, his ghost would have broken you back and made you humble. So,
yeah, that Iron Sheik, I totally agree. That was one of the best gimmicks, I think. I got a quick story about the sheep.
Oh, let's sit pretty. We're going to melt down into our armchairs, and Barry's going to lay it up for the sheik.
So we're in the dressing room. All the guys are in there. We're laughing. Everything. The sheik's, you know, a couple of chairs away from me, and Vince walks in and he says, "Hey, how's everybody doing today? You in a really good mood and everything?" And he says, "Sheik," he says, "I need to talk to you." And sheik goes, "Ugh, you know, just talk to me in front of everybody. I have nothing to hide." And Vince says, "Okay, you tested positive for drugs." And the sheik goes, "Oh, this is the best. This is incredible. I passed the test. I never do drugs. I do nothing." And everybody in the dressing room is going, you know, laughing. And he was serious. "I passed. I am positive. You know, this is very good, Vince McMahon." And Vince goes, "Oh, sheik, you don't understand." Now Vince is laughing. He goes, "No, that's bad. You were positive for drugs." "Oh, somebody rigged the test. It couldn't have been positive on me." And that was the sheik.
Oh, that is great. Oh, love it.
From A to Z, he's a star.
The sheik and his Heinekens, remember? You always have to have the, you know, smoke the gimmick, baby, and to drink the Heinekens.
I think good we should stuff. Just do a week of just sheik stories. That'd be amazing. There's an idea for the demo pod. Now,
we tag the Howard Stern gimmick and, you know, reminisce about the sheik stories. Yes.
That'd be great. That'd be amazing. Now, before my next question that I'm going to lay up for you, we're going to play a little game. Brian, I understand you've been listening to another incredible show as well as us. Talk to us about your new favorite podcast.
Listen, I have taken a deep dive the last few weeks, and I have been listening to Bill Eadie and Barry Darso with a little bit of my gimmick because they're over there on the demo pod, and they are breaking necks and cashing checks. It's getting hot over there. I'm telling you, these guys are on a rise in the YouTube universe. They are headed right to the top, and I'm just glad that they are doing this, and it's a wonderful show. And you got to check the demo pod.
Brian, unbelievable. Thank you so much. And Tom, I appreciate you guys on this show. But, you know, I don't know how we ever got started with the demo pod. We really don't want to work anymore. And it seems like we're working more than we ever did. I mean, we're out, you know, 3 weekends a month. And then now all of a sudden we're doing a podcast once a week. But we get going and we're having more fun. Just like right now, I could just sit and talk. And I don't even want to be around the business or anything, but I get with you guys like this and I just want to talk. And that's kind of what the demo pod is. And we're trying to keep it clean, but, you know, there's got to be a few stories in there that, you know. But, yeah, we're having the time of our life. And I hope all the people watching yours watches the demo pod, and I hope the guys with us are watching yours too. So you guys got a great show.
We're keeping it strong. Thank you so much. That means the world to us. Thank
you. It does. We really appreciate that, Barry. And thank you for sharing your time with us today, man.
Now, before you go, I've got a couple of interesting questions. I'm going to pose these up to you. Now, we like to play games with our guests, and we give them a variety of topics. We've just done the Mount Rushmore. Now I'm going to play a little game with you called Winner Stays On. So I'm going to give you a list of wrestlers, and it's going to be one against the other, and you're going to tell me who you would keep on at any particular point. Now, whether it's you like them personally in the back, whether or not they had great work rate, whether their gimmick was better than the other, you've got to go for it. No holds barred. Barry Darso, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Let's go. All right. So we're going to start it off. Hillbilly Jim or the Red Rooster?
Hillbilly Jim.
Rooster's gone. Hillbilly Jim or the African Dream Akeem?
Akeem.
So we got Akeem, the gobbledygooker.
Akeem.
Okay, Akeem stays on. Akeem or Brother Love?
I got to go with Akeem. And I love Brother Love too, but I got to go with Akeem.
Akeem's running strong right now. Ooh, repping the George. Yes. Okay, Akeem or the Big Boss Man?
That's a bad. That's you don't even do that to me. Look,
Gotta keep going.
I'm picking them both.
Nope, can't. It's got to be one or the other. One or the
Have
other.
one.
Well, the Big Boss Man.
Okay. We'll keep it in our heart. George, we love you. Big Boss Man or Kamala?
Man. Big Boss Man.
Okay. Boss Man stays on. Boss Man or Dude Love?
Boss Man.
Keeping it real. Boss Man or Nails?
Boss Man.
Boss Man or Sergeant Slaughter?
It's got to be Sarge.
Boss Man goes down. He smelt that nightstick shot. Sergeant Slaughter.
You know, this is really hard, you know.
I know. I've got three more. Let's see how we go. Sarge or the Iron Sheik?
I got to go Sarge.
Sheiky baby, not happy with Mr. Dazzler. Sarge or Doink the Clown?
Sarge.
At last, Sarge or the Repo Man?
Well, I gotta go with the Repo Man.
Yeah, baby! We're going awesome. Over! We're going over! We said the hot tag! Babyface Repo wins!
Fantastic.
I love you guys.
You're amazing. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of the Meltdown Universe, thank you so much to the legendary, the iconic, the one and only Barry Darso. Thank you so much, sir. Thank you. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for having me on the show, and thank all the fans. That's what makes all of us is the fans. So thanks.
A pleasure. And I'm opening up the invitation to you right now. We had a little chat with Bill earlier on. You guys are going to come back on and we're going to talk all demolition.
Sounds good. Sounds good. Take amazing. Care, you guys. Thank you.
Have the most amazing day. Barry, thank you so much for being with us. From the Meltdown, all our love to you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Well, 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 wasn't that the most scintillating conversation with a man, a myth, a legend, and a gimmick in himself, the legendary Barry Darso. It was so good to have him on the show. What did you think, Brian? Wasn't he just so insightful? We got so many scoops. That's what the Meltdown's about, right?
A ton of scoops that I did not expect. We went into some areas that I wasn't expecting, but they were all wonderful and positive. That's just what we do here on the Meltdown. We're all about taking the high road and being positive, baby. That's what we do. So, yeah, it was great. I enjoyed it so much, Tom.
It was awesome. Well, make sure you check us out next week. We've got another incredible guest lined up that we're actually interviewing tomorrow and having the show in our bag. And speaking of bags, Brian, tell them about a brand new feature that we've got here on the Meltdown.
As always, each and every week, we are improving, making this show bigger and better every single week. The Meltdown Mailbag, where you guys can send in your pet of the week. You know, we will choose from however many choices we got, whether it's a cat, dog, horse, whatever your pet is your pet. And we love our furry friends. So please send in the pet of the week. Send in your questions exclusive to the Meltdown Mailbag. And again, remember, guys, we will be here next week and doing what we do best. That is breaking necks and cashing checks. Much love from the Tomcat and yours truly. I will see you next week.